Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm joined today by former Aberdeen and Cali Thistle midfielder Stuart Duff. Stuart is, like the rest of us, stuck in lockdown at the moment. Stuart, how are you finding it?
To be honest, I've found myself just working through the lockdown, working for an oil and gas company in Aberdeen. We're classed as essential workers, which I'm not totally convinced about. But at the same time, it's been a busy period, to be honest. And you know, you are seeing slight bits of work, you know, being a bit quieter and whatnot. But at the same time, you know, things are picking up a little bit. But hopefully, this pandemic will come to an end shortly, and they'll find a cure for it.
So, are you in the office then? You're not working from home or anything?
No, I haven't been working from home the whole period. So my missus has been quite happy because it gets me out of the house, you know, away from her. So it's worked out okay that way. But you know, we're on site some of the times, and the rest of the time we're just based at the office and just the warehouse, etc.
I think I spoke to you once before, and you were talking about with still playing football and coaching and various things in the evening that your wife was perhaps a bit miffed that you were never home. So even during a pandemic, you're finding ways to get out of the house.
Yeah, well, that's one thing. My fiancée Katie, we're due to get married. We're actually due to get married a couple of weeks ago, but we actually pushed it back last year to the 1st of May next year. So she's been on my case to, obviously there's quite a lot to be done with that, the admin kind of side of it and invites and whatnot. And I've been out most nights of the week, whether it's with the Banks of Dee playing side of it, the Aberdeen coaching side of it, and work obviously as well. So it's been a manic period. So nothing's really changed from my point of view. But at the same time, I think she's enjoying a bit of quality time at home to herself with the dog.
Since we've had a couple of mentions of the sort of playing side of things already with Banks of Dee, what was your take on the decision to end the junior season the way it was decided with the vote to kind of declare the season null and void?
To be honest, I was a little bit disappointed, but at the same time, I can see it from all angles. I think a sensible decision would have been just to take the average points over the season so far and just work out that way. However, that decision was kind of taken out of the hands because I think there was two or three options that they could have went for. And, you know, there are some clubs with agendas for staying in the league or finishing a certain position in the league. So I can understand all aspects of it, but it is frustrating for us because I think it was pretty convincing that we would be going to at least win the league. I think it would have taken a monumental effort from another team to even catch us. But it's just one of those things. And at the end of the day, it's the health of the players and the clubs, you know, that's the most important thing. So we just need to move forward, and the manager's already been on for next year. Whether or not I'll play, I'm not too sure, but that's the motivation, you know, just to right this wrong, as some people see it.
So what is the thinking for next season? Are you leaning either way at the moment?
To be honest, I'm split down the middle, 50-50. Like I said before, a lot of my evenings and free time is taken up with helping the Aberdeen coaching. You know, that's three nights a week and a game on a Sunday. And I really enjoy that part of it. You know, that's going to be quite a good transition after my complete playing career. But at the same time, I do enjoy the playing side of it. So I think a couple of sit-down discussions with the missus and the coaches and stuff, and we'll just see what's best. But I haven't really decided as of yet.
Could if Banks of Dee were to find a way up to the Highland League next season, could that possibly sway your decision either way?
Not particularly. I've heard murmurs of Banks of Dee potentially, you know, stepping up into the Highland League, which I think their squad's fully capable of doing. You know, I think the track record against Highland League clubs is very, very good. And, you know, even with working with the players myself, I know that they could all hold their own in that league. So I think it would only be a matter of time. But whether or not I'd be around to be a part of that, I'm not too sure.
All right then. Well, let's go back to the start.
Okay.
So you were born in Aberdeen. What was your boys' club situation growing up? Because you obviously ended up at Dundee United in their youth academy as opposed to in Aberdeen's youth academy. So what was the sort of story from starting playing the game through to joining Dundee United?
Just started playing the playing football when I was, you know, primary school at Broomhill School, and at that time there was a few select teams here and there, but I wasn't really that involved. You know, I just enjoyed my football. I didn't really think too much about making a full career out of it. And at that time as well, alongside playing my primary school team was Dice. That's where I started, at Dice Boys Club. And you know, I had some really good coaches, Eric Manall, Shinny Brothers. You know, a lot of, you know, the Ronnie Cromar. You know, a lot of these coaches, you know, if you see them again now, it's great to get a catch up with them. But that's predominantly where I spent my juvenile football. And then I had a year at West Hill, where they basically took near enough the better quality players from each team and put them into one. And it was actually a funny thing, because my dad actually said to me at the end of the season, we'd won absolutely everything and clean sweeped everything. Nobody could touch us. Scottish Cups, absolutely everything we won. And my dad said, listen, you know, a lot of these guys are getting picked up in the team. Why don't you step to a lesser team next year and give yourself a bit more of a challenge? And if you're able to stand out in that side, then more teams might be inclined to have a look at you. So that's exactly what happened.
In terms of your position back then, were you a midfielder, were you a defender? I know you've played various positions throughout your career.
Predominantly midfield. I would have played. I was quite fortunate to be both footed, so I right throughout my career it probably went against me a little bit, frustratingly. But at the same time, you know, I love playing, and if somebody asked me to go and play left back, I would feel quite comfortable going doing that. So to be honest, I covered most positions all over the park, other than striker really, and goalkeeper. So those were the only two that I didn't cover throughout my career.
So when you ended up at Dundee United, who was in the youth academy with you? What sort of names that might stand out? Because it was obviously a time when you were at Dundee United. You spent a few years there where, I mean, most of the league finishes were maybe bottom six, but there was highs like Scottish Cup final. I think you played in the UEFA Cup, or certainly qualified for the UEFA Cup as well.
Yeah, to be honest, at the youth team at Dundee United, you know, part of the reason why I signed for Dundee United, one, because logistically where it was, you know, only an hour from Aberdeen in case I got homesick. And at the same time, they had a really good reputation for bringing youngsters through. And I don't think there was many other Scottish teams that were given as many youngsters opportunities in the first team or a pathway. So that was the thinking behind it. And the likes of Mark Wilson, David McCracken, Stephen Thompson, who's now in the BBC, Blethyn Rowish. A lot of these guys were in the youth teams and round about that. So it was a really good atmosphere and a really good a learning curve for me.
What was the high point of your time at Dundee United, would you say? I know there was over or more than 100 appearances, but there was a few managers as well, wasn't there?
To put one highlight, it'd probably be the Scottish Cup final, just to be a part of that and playing that right throughout. Obviously, the result didn't go our way, but the experience itself was a fantastic thing. You know, I've got a lot of great memories at that club, and the amount of managers that came and went there. You know, it started from Alex Smith to, you know, Ian McCall to Maurice Malpass, Gordon Chisholm. I could spend 5 minutes rattling off all the managers. So, Craig Levine. You know, so there was a lot of different ideas in quite a short space of time, you know, to try to gel a team. But I think they've found their footing now, and it's good to see they're coming back up to the Premiership.
Dare I ask this, but if you had to pick a favourite of your managers at Dundee United, obviously there's been a lot of people that say wonderful things about Craig Levine, a lot of people that maybe don't say such wonderful things. Ian McCall as well, another one of these divisive managers. Who would you kind of say was the best one for you?
To be honest, I would struggle to put it down to one. If I was to choose, it would probably be Alex Smith, who gave him a debut. Obviously, a lot of Aberdeen fans, you know, they'll know a lot about St Mirren as well. You know, he's got a really good reputation, and he was the one that gave him an opportunity. So he's probably the one I learned the most from. And fortunately for me, in my youth team days and the under-21s, our managers were Maurice Malpass and Terry Butcher, who, again, at that time, massive legends in the game, Scotland and England. And to learn from those guys as well, it's not something you see nowadays. There's those caliber of coaches and players taking on youth teams.
to talk through then a couple of the high and low points for Dundee United. There was a winner at Ibrox in the 2004-2005 season, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, that was actually a season that wasn't the greatest, to be honest. I think we were struggling down the bottom of the league, and Rangers were at the top, and I think they were pushing for the league, and it was a midweek game, and you know, nobody expected us to go down there to win, and I got a goal within the first 5-10 minutes. The other 85 minutes were absolutely backs to the wall, absolutely battered. And for some reason, you know, things were coming off the post along the goal lines, and we actually came away with the 3 points, which turned out to be pretty vital come the end of the season, because that, in theory, would have basically kept us up. And at the same time, it dented Rangers' title hopes, and basically, yeah.
That wouldn't be the last time that you were involved in derailing Rangers' title aspirations. However, we'll get to that. What I wanted to ask you about next was a sort of low point in your time at Dundee United. Don't know if you'd be expecting this or not, but the Rudy Scatchell incident.
Yeah.
Can you maybe take us through what happened there?
It was actually, again, I think it was a midweek game, high-intensity game. You know, Hearts had a very physical team then. And there was just a coming together with all the players, and you know, I think a couple of weeks beforehand he'd spat at Neil Lennon, and basically just spat at me at the same time. So I've highlighted it to the ref, the coaches and stuff after the game, but nothing ever came of it. And, you know, it was not something I wanted to dwell on, but at the same time, I didn't think it was really that classy from such a good player as well. You know, he didn't really need to do that to grab the attention. His playing style was good enough, but it's just one of those unfortunate things. You know, I think heat at the moment, it just got to him.
Is something like that something you shrug off in the weeks that follow, or is it something that sticks with you as like kind of a almost maybe a worst, lowest point of your career or something? Or is it not something that you dwell on like that?
It's not something you really dwell on. To be honest, you probably get absolute pelters off the boys because they'll look at it as if, you know, oh, somebody's taking the mickey out, yeah, you know, and then they jump in the bandwagon. So, to be honest, quite a lot of light's made out of it. So, no, you don't tend to dwell on it. At the time, you're absolutely furious, and, you know, not long after it. But after a wee while, I think there was, you know, everything sort of calmed down. And, you know, I think it happened again not long after. So I did think, you know, a bit of karma, really.
When you ended up leaving Dundee United, obviously, having made so many appearances, how to then leave for Aberdeen, boyhood club, on a kind of almost on a free transfer, was that a positive at the time, or was it, were you kind of disappointed that you'd ended up leaving Dundee United?
It actually came at the probably at the right time. I found my playing time under Craig Levein a bit limited then, and you know, I'd maybe play 3 or 4 games and I'd be dropped one or two, so it was kind of in and out the team. And he basically just said to me, you know, Aberdeen have, you know, inquired about you. I don't have a problem with you speaking to him. I know it's your hometown club. If you want to have the discussion, then feel free. So, you know, there wasn't too much to really think about. You know, it was always an ambition of mine to play for Aberdeen, and to be given the opportunity was really good. You know, it was something that I was ready for in my career, and it was probably the next challenge, because I had been at Dundee United for such a long time, but Aberdeen was the next challenge, and you know, I was happy that it came to fruition, really.
So you must have arrived just after the Bayern Munich game in the UEFA Cup, is that right?
Yeah, I'd actually played in the UEFA Cup for Dundee United earlier in that season, so I was cup tied, so all these fantastic trips to Munich and whatnot I missed out on. So I was running around the cricket pitch behind Pataudry's keeping fit. But I know I went to the home games against Bayern Munich, and you know, fantastic atmospheres, and it was just unfortunate that I'd already been cup tied with Dundee United earlier on that season. But some fantastic games and fantastic experiences, and you know, I think some of the fans still talk about, you know, the games against these high caliber clubs now, and it's something that Aberdeen should be doing season in, season out, and hopefully they can do that.
You had, in your time at Aberdeen, you actually had quite a good run in games against the Old Firm. I think you played in 2 Pataudry wins over Rangers, and then a win over Celtic as well, the 4-2-1. I'm going to actually take you back to a sort of maybe a negative again here. That 2-0 win over Rangers in May 2008, where I think it was the last game of the season and they were going for the title, it was going down the last day. Obviously, there was a Nacho Novo incident when he put in a pretty horrendous challenge on you that Don's fans still speak about. What are your reflections on that incident?
The incident itself, again, you know, I think we were in control of the game, and I think the Rangers were really pushing for it. You could tell that the atmosphere, you know, there was a lot of needle and bite to the game, which, you know, you get that in any game, but, you know, with the amount of pressure on both sides, you know, Aberdeen were desperate for the win and Rangers obviously desperate for the win for the league, and it just came about, you know, I went to ground and I knew that I was always going to make the ball first, but I wasn't expecting Nacho to kind of go over the ball a little bit and just be a bit nasty with it. But it's one of those things, and I've spoken to him after that, and it's all okay. But at the time, I thought it was a bit nasty, but fortunately, it wasn't anything too serious.
Are wins of the Old Firm, are those the things you class as your best moments at Aberdeen, or is there something else that maybe wouldn't be so obvious to us?
I would say that probably the game against Celtic would be a highlight for me because I'd been out injured with tendonitis. I'd an operation in both of my knees a couple of months before that. So I'd actually played against the RAF up at Balgownie on the Wednesday, and Jimmy Calderwood took me off after half time. So I was furious and I just couldn't get my head around it, not knowing that the game on Sunday was against Celtic. And I turned up and he says, "Right, you're back in, you're starting." So the first 15, 20 minutes of that game, I was, you know, trying to get my breath. I hadn't played a game of football in 3 months. So the way the game went, you know, to set a couple up, score a goal against, you know, a right good Celtic side was probably one of the highlights, to be honest. But, you know, I really enjoyed my time at Aberdeen. A lot of good friends and still people I speak to. And that's probably the relationship that's built into the coaching side now.
So you were able to forgive Jimmy Calderwood for that, substitution in the end?
At the end, I was absolutely cursing him, and I said to him, you know, I'm needing minutes. I've not played in, you know, 2 months, 2.5 months, and I'd been spending a month with John Sharp, the physio, just honestly running up and down the sand dunes with Ryan Jack and Tommy Wright, who I must admit one of them was sick. I just felt that I was ready for games, and that was. So I basically had 45 minutes of football, then I was straight into a game against Celtic. So it was quite a rude awakening.
What was Tommy Wright like as a guy? He's the one that Don's fans will sort of remember. I think he got sent off in his debut.
Yeah, against Motherwell. Yeah,
and then sort of maybe faded away.
I think he came up with a big reputation and quite a hefty price tag as well at the time, but. I think he didn't adapt to the Scottish game that quickly, and I think he struggled after that. I think physically he was, you know, a big strong lad, but I think he might see it as if he wasn't given enough opportunities. But at the same time, you know, there was other players ahead of him that were playing to higher standards. So it was just one of those things. But a lovely, lovely lad off the pitch, and he's definitely one you would want in your corner if anything kicked off.
Who was the best player in that? In terms of what they were doing in training and stuff in that Aberdeen team under Calderwood?
You would look at the likes of Shaun Ialuko. You could see at that age that he had that little X factor. He had something else about him. It was just about him trying to hit that consistently. And I think he's went on to have, you know, an unbelievable career. And I'm not surprised that he has done that. And I think if you ask a lot of the players at that time, he'd be the player that, you know, stood out and he was the one. But again, right throughout the squad, there were so many good professionals that, you know, did the right things off the park, on the park, training habits. You know, the professionalism was second to none.
Did you play in the European loss to Sigma Olomouc?
unfortunately, I did.
See the way I phrased that one.
I'd been no. It's all pre-season. I've been playing. Playing centre mid, and you know, I had quite a good relationship with Mark Kerr and stuff at the time, and I'm, you know, very, very friendly with him to this day. And for some unknown reason, Mark McGee decided that, you know, because we struggled for a centre half and we didn't have any at the time, or a few out were injured, he'd put me in against Sigma. And as you can see from the scoreline and stuff, I don't think it was purely all down to myself, but to put someone in just off a whim, just a different position, was a bit of an eye-opener. And it's a position now where I feel quite comfortable in, but at the time I was a midfielder and I should not have been playing centre-half. But I think the performance right throughout the team probably that night was, and away, was, you know, really poor.
Was that the lowest point in your Don's career? I know we were, I think you were on the bench for the Queen of the South Scottish Cup semi-final as well.
Yeah. I would say the Sigma game was definitely took a bit of time to get over that, because we'd worked so hard to get ourselves in a European situation, you know, where we'd be playing against better sides, and to go out in that kind of manner really did hurt. But again, in the flip side, you know, you've got the Queen of the South game, where looking back on it now, I'm probably grateful that I didn't go on the pitch and I wasn't involved in that, because I think if you look at, no disrespect to Queen of the South, but if you're Aberdeen, you're expecting to go and win that quite comfortable. But at the time, I don't know, for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. And it was just one of those days where, you know, shut the curtains, go to bed, and, you know, hope it just blows over. But it was just a devastating performance, and one that you look back on and think, what if, maybe, because that would have taken to a cup final. And I get, you know, in a one game against any team, you know, you just never know what will happen. So it was really disappointing.
How did your Aberdeen exit come about from your perspective?
If I'm being brutally honest, I probably would have liked to stay at Aberdeen a wee bit longer. At the time, under Mark McGee, it was a very, very strange situation. So he started playing quite a lot of younger players, trying to blood them into the team. And I think from his downfall, he put too many in, and they didn't have that experience, that game knowledge, etc. And it wasn't until probably the 8th or 9th last game of the season that he took in all the more experienced boys, myself, Derek Young, Darren Markett, you know, these type of guys. And, you know, we went on to win, I think, 8 out of 10 games, and, you know, we finished mid-table quite relatively safe and no problems at all. And he then decided to really get rid of all these guys that had just helped him out. Move on to the season after, was he then went back to playing all these younger players again, and I think he only lasted a couple of months. So that was about a frustrating one. But by that point, I'd already arranged to move up to Inverness, because going back to the links of Terry Butcher and Maurice Malpass, who were the manager up there at the time, I just felt a fresh change was needed, because I didn't particularly enjoy my time under that stewardship at Aberdeen, should I say.
And then Cali Thistle, again, I think it was one season, but it was a season of basically playing week in, week out, so it must have been pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, that was, and I was playing in a position, centre midfield, week in, week out, and I think even when I came back to Aberdeen and played against Aberdeen, you know, I always have good performances. I was just, that was my motivation, just to show that, you know, I can play centre mid week in, week out, and it's not a problem at all against any club in the Scotland. I had a really enjoyable time up there, a lovely club, and under the, you know, a lot of good guys, Adam Rooney, Johnny Hayes, Lee Cox, Ross Toakley, Grant Monroe. So you had a lot of guys that had worked their ways up the leagues, had came over, so that was their first experience. But I'd spent a month on loan before I signed for them officially. So I knew a few of the guys, and it just felt like the right move at that time, and I love the place to stay as well.
The likes of Johnny Hayes and Adam Rooney obviously later became very familiar to Don's fans. Did you know when you were at Cali with them just how good Johnny and Adam Rooney were?
Yeah. Adam, he was one of those where if you give him an opportunity one-on-one through and goal, then especially in and around the box, he was always one of those strikers that never ever lashed at things, you know, try to laces. He was always side foot, very placed, and he stayed behind at training, a bit before training, worked in that. And Johnny Hayes, just his enthusiasm, and it doesn't surprise me. Johnny's a great lad, and I got on really well with him, and he's a bit of a character off the pitch as well, to be honest, but a bit of a joker. But no, there was a few players like that at that time in Inverness where, you know, everything just gelled, and Terry Butcher really, he did well to get the right characters in the right positions. And, you know, it showed in our season's performances. I think we were a year unbeaten away from home. And we always did well up at home. It was a tough place to play. So, good times up there.
I think from the outside looking in, you leave Inverness after that 1 year and then you move abroad, and it maybe looks like that at the moment you left Inverness that you were maybe making a conscious effort to sort of broaden your horizons and try something new. But was that actually how it happened, or was it kind of you left Inverness and then a few months later that sort of all came about?
That it was, to be honest, it was, I already had a few things in place. It was always something, again, going back to Mark Kerr, who he played in Greece for a year or two, and he said it was absolutely fantastic. So I said, right, I really want to try abroad and give it a go. And I was a few things in Greece, Cyprus, that basically were kind of agreed, and it all kept falling through to the last minute. So that's where I found myself, and, you know, I had to have the tough conversation with Terry Butcher and just let him know that, you know, I wouldn't be signing. He couldn't hold the contract forever. So, you know, it was just one of those things that I found myself without a club for a wee while until basically an agent called him up and says, listen, you know, I've got a move for you, but it is harder to move abroad. There's a lot of legalities and different obstacles, but at the same time, it's something I was definitely conscious of doing.
I suppose from an agent's perspective as well, your agent will know sort of various people at various clubs in Scotland, but then when you say to your agent, look, I'm wanting a club that's further afield, it might take time for them to almost build that bank of contacts to get you the offer. So that's sort of how it played out.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's quite surprising. I think a lot of agents, they all deal with each other. So if there's an agent from Scotland who will deal with an agent from Greece, who I'm putting them in touch with, you know, a Russian agent, then you're looking, you know, you're working your way basically east across, if you want. So I was literally quite open. I will go anywhere to play, and, you know, to sample another language, another style of play, another culture. But that's basically how it came about. And I'd spent a couple of months. I was given an opportunity to go to Malta and play there for a couple of months. I went over there, and that was almost like part-time football, but their Premiership, and I probably wasn't in the best condition either. So that was a little sample of what I was looking for. But again, I was looking for something a bit more long-term.
In terms of the standard in Malta, what was it like in that short spell you were there?
Again, I would say probably, in all respect, probably League One Championship in Scotland, if that, to be honest. I think probably League One, League Two in Scotland, it would be along those kind of lines, you know, part-time football. The guys didn't take it like, overly serious, but a lot of the clubs ground share, use the same training facilities. It's not a big place, Malta, so it's only an hour, you know, you can cover it in an hour. In a car, so it is quite a densely, you know, densely populated kind of place. Everybody's all in one sort of area, so it's hard to get away from it. To be fair, you can't really go away to the countryside and do your own thing, and, you know, go to the beach, because everything is so close. But that was the only thing I found a little bit tougher. You know, you were confined to where you were.
So same question again. Then you quickly moved to Kairat, who Aberdeen fans know well now. What was the Kazakhstan standard like? Would you think it's one of these leagues where even then that people in Scotland might, just because it's Kazakhstan, think it was a worse standard than it actually was?
You just hit the nail on the head there. I was probably the same before I went. You know, Kazakhstan, you're thinking, you know, I've never heard of a team from there. Or, I don't know, you know, how many good, fantastic players do you hear coming from Kazakhstan? But it wasn't until actually I went there that I quickly realised that it was in a completely different level to the SBL or what I was used to. You were probably looking along the lines of, and I've said this before, it's probably four or five teams that are probably in the lines of like Celtic, Rangers, that sort of calibre. Unfortunately for me, I was at one of them, and Kairat, you know, the whole entire time there was just a fantastic experience, language, culture, playing style. And again, the standard was scarily high, because a lot of the clubs took in five or six internationals, and I was probably one that wasn't an international. So for me, it brought me on as a player as well, and I came back a better player after playing there.
So what's it like then when you move to somewhere like Kazakhstan? What's it like on that first day when you arrive for training and you're meeting your teammates? Presumably the language barrier was very much there at that point. How does that all function?
The first time that I met all the guys was actually a training camp in Turkey. So I actually had to go direct to Turkey, because their season shuts down in September till March. It's just basically too cold for them to play. So what they do is they go away and have winter camps in Turkey or Dubai for a couple of weeks. And they do that four or five times. And the very last time, they'll then go back to Almaty or whatever city they're from, and you know, they'll start the training there. So the surroundings and everything of the training was really good. You know, the facilities in Turkey were different class. The guys, again, like you say, very, very little English. You know, they'd get by doing yes and no, and that'd be about it. But there was a Spanish guy there from Real Madrid, Alberto Heredia, so he actually signed later on. So he spoke not bad English, so I got quite pally with him, and we just got by until the contract was signed maybe 2 or 3 days into the trial. So it was really good.
In footballing terms, how were those 2 years then? How much success did you have? Do you think you could have done better than you did? Are you happy with how the team got on? Do you think you played to your level?
I think the club itself was in a bit of a transition period. They had a new owner, Kairat Borenbaev, who's, you know, very, very wealthy man, and you know, backed everybody to the hilt. And the first year, I think we finished mid-table, if I remember rightly. In the second year, that was under Vladimir Weiss, whose son was obviously Vladimir Weiss, the same name. He was at Rangers.
Yeah.
So he took Slovakia to the World Cup. So a really good caliber of manager, and somebody I still speak to. And, you know, I probably learned a lot from him as a coach and as assistant Boris Kitka. And we finished third, I think, the second year. So overall, it was just a fantastic experience right throughout. And it was just unfortunate that I had to come back due to regulations in the Kazakh league.
In terms, I think I've seen you say this before, but in terms of the regular season, the Kazakhstan's such a huge country, isn't it, that the travelling for games is, it's planes as opposed to on roads.
Yeah, we used the bus. We had this big fancy bus, and we used to stay in the hotel the night before at a home game, and shuttle the bus from the hotel to the ground. And that was basically, other than once, that's the only time we used it. We did have 1 4-hour bus drive that, basically, once we arrived there, the manager says we're never ever doing that again. But every other away game was a flight. The longest was 3.5 hours. The shortest was about 1.5 hours. So it just shows you the size of the place you're having to cover. And it was a good experience because you got to see different parts of the country as well.
So in terms of your spare time, what were you doing with yourself to kind of, because I don't know. Was it quite lonely at times? I mean, being there, or did you get yourself out and about enough that you kind of dampened that side of things?
To be honest, the first year was probably the trickiest, because I was they put me up and a few other guys up in a, like, almost a luxury spa resort. So that was our home for a year. A lot of the time, the guys were really brilliant, because they would invite you out for tea near enough every night. You could go to the cinema. There was English showings, some stuff. Spent a bit of time trying to learn the language, going to different sites. You know, the guys were really good, because they would say, listen, come out with us and the family if they're having barbecues. And you get to get used to all their traditions. A lot of them were Muslim. The other lot were maybe Russian Orthodox. So we had priests coming in with the kind of different rituals that they do have for both religions, and they both respected each other. So overall, it was just a complete and utter eye opener. I was probably closed-minded before I went there, but when I came back, I was I think it did a lot for my character and me as a person.
So to this point, you're still, I think, the only Brit that's played in Kazakhstan, and British players generally have this pretty well-earned reputation that they tend not to go and play abroad. Do you think, what you're talking about there, the experiences you had, do you think that's a real shame that not a lot of players put in your position, given the choice to go to Kazakhstan, would have actually taken it and would have had those experiences?
I'm quite sure that a lot of guys probably would have taken the opportunity. However, I don't know longevity. If, you know, you tend to find that a lot of guys, if they do go abroad, they come back 6 months later or 3 months later and, you know, just say it wasn't for them. If they're used to away here in the UK, then you need to go with an open mind and know that it's not going to be like Scotland. It's not going to be like your day-to-day living here and what you're used to for the last 12 years playing SPL. So I would definitely recommend it to anybody that's going to do it, but it's not as easy as it sounds. You know, there is a lot of sacrifice that needs to be done, but the rewards you can get from going there and developing as a person, as a player, some of the players I played over there were just incredible. And I picked up things from them, and I came back and always felt like I was such a better player when I came back from there.
What were the fans like in Kazakhstan? Did you ever have interactions with them when you were kind of walking around?
Yeah, they would. You'd see the odd fans, because Almaty itself, the city that I was in, it was quite a high populated place. I think it was about 2.2 million. So, you know, the chances of you bumping into, you know, Kairat fans were quite slim. So you could actually go about your day to day business. However, you go to some places where you knew that, you know, the Kairat fans would maybe hang about, or they'd be on about you, but they wouldn't pester you like they would here. They'd maybe ask for a quick signature or a photo, and they made quite a big deal of us signing at the start. So there was maybe 100-foot billboards, like our pictures and action shots and stuff, like boarded around the stadium. So you couldn't really get away from it all over the city. So you couldn't really get away from it.
Full on celebrity.
Oh, I was mortified at the time, but I was taking pictures to send home to my folks, and you know, they were chuffed. So no, it was one of my mates actually came over to spend a week there, and he got his pictures taken outside, and he was like, I can't believe there's like a 200-foot full body shot of you in an action shot taking a volley. He's like, it's just incredible.
So when you contrast that with the fact that obviously after 2 years, Kazakh rules meant that you had to come home pretty much.
Yeah.
Do you think actually you'd still be there, or you would have been there for like a good while longer had those rules not been in place?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. The club actually said that themselves. You know, we wanted you to stay, and I had such a good relationship with the manager at that time, Vladimir Weiss, and the boss, Karat Boranbaev. I got on so well with them and all the players. You know, they were gutted when I left, and obviously I was gutted to leave. But at the same time, I think they changed the rule about a year after I came back, so there could have been potential for them. But obviously, time had moved on and whatnot, and you know, different circumstances. But at the time, I probably would have finished my career there and probably had another 6 or 7 years there, and who knows, maybe even stayed there for a longer term. You know, maybe like after my career, maybe stayed there.
So you obviously returned to Scotland, and it's part-time football you return to, and at the same time you're obviously having to go about working out what your kind of post-football or your winding down career is going to be, because you're part-time. Was that a particularly difficult period?
Not particularly. I did have a few options to come back to the SPL, couple of top four teams and stuff, and it was a conscious effort for me again. If I was going to go back playing full-time, I wanted to go abroad again. Again, going to China was one of the things that at that time, just before it kicked off, I'd heard murmurs when I was at Kazakhstan that it was going to be the place to go, you know, a lot of big names and stuff. So there was actually a deal in place for that, but that fell through at the last minute, which was devastating, to be honest. But that was probably the realisation of, I need to make a conscious effort here, because the football career doesn't last forever. I can either keep plodding around here and there, or I can try and get my foot into, you know, an industry for longevity for after my career. So that's what I decided to do. And alongside doing that, you know, John Sharon at Cove gave me the opportunity to go and play for them. So at that time, they were a bit of a, you know, probably fifth, sixth place team. And fortunately for me, when I went, a few other guys went, we obviously really picked up and started winning leagues and trophies and stuff. So, you know, it was an enjoyable period.
Was it clear when you arrived at Cove with John that just how ambitious they were? Obviously, when you look at him, that was the start of where they are now. Potentially going to be in League One next season. The reconstruction doesn't stop that. But was it clear then that there was that real sort of fire to get up the divisions?
The first year, not really, no, because when I arrived, they were, like I said, they were neither here nor there. They were a bit of a stalling team. It wasn't until, you know, the start of the next year, we really went on a run, and the new ground, you know, there was murmurs of the new ground getting built. Just a lot of things kind of fell into place, and then you kind of saw the ambition of the club and the people behind the scenes, you know, how much they were really pushing for it. So the potential was always there. I think it will be for many other Highland League clubs. It's just whether the, you know, over the piece they can actually do that. But at the, when I first initially arrived at Cove, it wasn't something that was in the radar. But towards the end, obviously, it was a massive thing.
We are next club then. Obviously, you then left Cove for Inverurie. Do you potentially see a way for Inverurie to get that sort of same level as Cove have got to, which is the consistency and the to kind of be the top dogs in the Highland League, I suppose, and then climb the pyramid up into the Scottish leagues?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I think there's potential for four or five teams to do that. I think Fraserburgh, Brora, Inverurie, Fermartin. You know, there's five or six teams that will probably Bucky Thistle. There's, you know, they would bite a hand off to get promoted up to League Two. It's just whether or not, you know, I can't speak for each team individually, but I think Inverurie have got things in place behind the scenes. They're a very well-run club, for being a part-time club. You know, commercially, they do very well. But on the park, it's kind of a bit stop-start. And hopefully they can push on this year with the new manager, Andy Lowe. I think he's done quite a good job since he's come in. And you just never know. And I've been down once or twice to watch a few of the games and I get a free day. But we shall see, really.
Talked about getting a free day there. Obviously, those are few and far between. Just finally, on the youth work you're doing, am I right to say that at one point you actually done some scouting for Manchester City?
That was a couple of years back. There was a guy who got in touch and just asked if, you know, asked if I would look at a few players. So a list would be sent up and you'd, you know, it's quite a detailed breakdown of what they'd be looking for. So you would identify players that potentially could invite down or whatnot. And it was just one of those things at the time. And it didn't really last too long. Just purely, I didn't have the time and the commitment. I couldn't put that commitment into it. So it was just one of those things. But no, I definitely learned something from it. And it's not something that I would really look to go into now. You know, I definitely focus more on the coaching side and I enjoy doing that. I love it.
With the coaching, is the aim to sort of graduate from working with kids to potentially being a manager at a senior level one day? Or is that not something you've got an ambition for?
Yeah, I probably don't have that ambition to go and be a manager as of yet, whereas a coach, a first team coach, under 20s coach, you know, I'd be quite happy. I think that's the next logical step after working with the kids. It was actually Tony Docherty that said to me, you know, go in, get the experience, make all your kind of mistakes with the, you know, your learning curves, your all that sort of stuff for the kids, so when you do go up to a higher level, you're kind of prepared for it. So a lot of valuable advice, you know, those guys, you know, Tony Dock and Dale, you know, a lot of these guys, Barry Robson, they're all there for if you need a chat or a bit of help or advice. They're, you know, they're great guys. I've played with all, well, apart from Tony Dock, I've played with all of them, so they're all ex-teammates, so they're there for advice. And it's maybe something I'll look into the future. I think I've got one more badge to do, the UEFA Pro license, which I potentially could do next year. But again, that'll come down to the missus and wedding fund, because it's quite costly.
You're speaking about playing with the Don's first team coaching staff there. Barry Robson, obviously people will kind of, we'll wait and see what happens in his future with coaching and management. But Derek McInnes, did you know that he would make a top manager when he was a player?
Yeah, yeah. He had that almost professionalism. He had that air about him where he had that respect, because even his playing career, Rangers, West Brom, played in France as well, played at a few clubs at high level. And even when he came into the dressing room, the way he looked after himself after training, before training, a lot of the younger guys actually copied what he was doing and he took them under their wing. And he was a terrific teammate, Derek, and I'm not really that surprised that he's wanting to have the career he has in management. And I think, you know, there probably is more to come from him. And especially, like you touched on Barry Robson, I think there's definitely a big career there. But I'll be interested to see how actually it all plays out. But I'm not surprised by either of them, to be honest.
Okay, thanks so much for joining us today, Stuart.
No problem.
That concludes today's special bonus episode of Northern Goal. Should you want to ask us anything, make a point, or generally berate us, please get in touch by email, as always, at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. And look out for our regular episode this coming Tuesday. We will be with you in the coming weeks and months with guest interviews and the latest developments as we have them. So please continue to listen. If you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hope you loved the episode. And if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Preston Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.